All right, I'd like to call to order our December 20th, 2023 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. And we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Brennan, would you lead us in that, please?
Certainly. Hand over your heart. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
Present.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Rainey?
Present.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Here.
Chair Blumenberg?
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right, we'll move on to adoption of the agenda. Chris, I think you had a suggestion on that.
Yes, if we could pull consent item B. And for a brief discussion, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I think I was on the same wavelength there. All right, so we got a motion. So a motion to approve the agenda
I make a motion that we approve the agenda with the change that consent item B be moved to the regular agenda.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 All right, so the agenda is adopted with the exception that we're going to pull consent item B. All right, we will move on to approval of the minutes from our December 6, 2023 meeting. Commissioners, thoughts on those minutes?
I'll move to adopt the minutes as presented.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes as presented. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, the minutes from December 6th are approved. All right, we'll move on to public communications, an opportunity for the public to testify on items that are not on tonight's agenda. Do we have anybody in the audience that would like to make a public comment? Do we have anybody online who would like to make a public comment?
We have no one online who is signified.
Right. So we will close public communications and move on to a closed session report. Council?
Chair Blumenberg, members of the board. The board met in closed session under section 54956.8 to discuss the five leases listed in the agenda. Direction was given to the negotiators by the board, and no reportable action was taken under the Brown Act.
Thank you. Move on to board communications, an opportunity for commissioners to present brief reports on port-related issues. Commissioners, Chris?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just want to share with the commissioners, and Tony was there with me. I had a chance to attend I'm not sure what the name is, but I'm going to call it the holiday celebration and recognition of service yeah, recognition
and
of
our
staff.
Annual staff holiday get-together.
Staff holiday get-together. And a terrific event, great turnout by staff, and just really want to, share with you what a great event it was and what a good job Brian and his team have done, I think, to build the team. It's terrific. Everyone seemed to be having a great time, and just really happy to see everyone feeling so positive and energetic about the port and the harbor. So
thank you.
Thank you for that, Brian.
Thank you.
Likewise, I was there, had an opportunity to talk to staff, get feedback, get opinions, basically get to know how long they've been here, and informing me the history of the port. It was very, very, and it was fun. But I was also, Brian, impressed that the number of the staff that was there.
Thank you.
Very good. Brian, Jackie, anything to add? I wanted to add one thing. I came across an interesting article in the California Diving News that the Santa Barbara Channel had earned the official designation as a whale heritage area. So just I think that's a great addition to the role that the Port District plays, right? We're the gateway to the Channel Islands National Park. And to get there, you got to go through that whale heritage area. So it's a nice addition to recognize how valuable this area, how important it is to the natural environment, and just what a great place it is. So actually for all my managers at work, I gave them all whale watching trips. So go out and see the heritage area.
Nice.
Oh, good news.
Oh, I want to work.
Better than a cookie. A little bit more expensive than a cookie, too.
I'll go work for him.
All right. We'll close board communications, move on to our staff and general manager report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in your packet, of course, are the November department staff reports. If you have any questions or comments related to those, see quite a few of our staff are here. Some are also participating online. We're not quite sure where the weather is headed later this evening, and we have some folks that are a little bit out of the area, so you might have some folks online as well tonight. But those are all there. Great photos, great reports from the team. Ventura Harbor's annual Parade of Lights was this past weekend. We had a really big successful event this year. The weather was good, able to do the fireworks both nights. And a total of over 56 boat participants this year. So 42 each night, so it's sort of spread out. But really strong participation. That's the most I've seen when as I've been here. Wanted to extend a special thank you and appreciation to the boaters and the crew who participated. Obviously, hours of time that they put into decorating their boats for the public and the harbor community to enjoy. This 2 nights ago, myself and the marketing team and some facility staff were at the Greek, where we hosted our annual awards reception for the event. I think we had over 75 attendees on Monday night. Really strong participation, a lot of fun. I'm handing out checks and prizes, so it's a fun event for everybody. Everyone's in the holiday spirit as well. So yeah, plaques, prizes, and gifts to all. So thank you to our Chair Mike Blumenberg and Commissioner Tony Rainey serving as judges this year for us, and having to keep up with all those boats going by and doing judging. We also had our new city manager, Bill Ayoub, and our chamber CEO, Stephanie Caldwell, rounding out our judging team. So we had them up here at the Port District offices on Saturday evening, the second night of the event, and enjoying the boats coming by. And of course, they ham it up as they get by the judges, so they make sure they put on a good show. So special thanks also to the Parade of Lights sponsors themselves, also Towboat US, who was kind of our car, our pace car for the event, or in this case, pace boat, leading the boats through the event, and of course, Harbor Patrol for all their work. This was written up by marketing. They left themselves out, so they shouldn't do that. I will make sure marketing is the department that coordinates this event. But it is certainly with the assistance of the entire Port District team. There was a lot of evaluations of our parade last year, which went very well, but things that we wanted to work on this year. We brought in extra security, private security, to participate at the event for us, and just worked on the whole presentation of the weekend. And I think it really paid off in terms of the effort. I've gotten a lot of good feedback from the community as a whole. So appreciate all that, marketing, marina, facilities, even administrative staff in putting this all together. We also had Winter Wonderland and Holiday Marketplace for our community and, of course, for our merchants and tenants out at the village. And there was Harbor Santa Paddle. I think that got pushed back from a week or so ago when the winds were up. So that was also this past weekend. That was great. All of that drew big crowds. Both nights were busy. Saturday, I think, was especially busy. Very full house here at the village and throughout the harbor. Portside was able to take advantage of this. They had their own little event over there, also a good spot to watch the parade. So I think they had some food trucks and some other things that they were doing out there, which is great to see, too. Apparently, two marriage proposals in the middle of this weekend. I got to add that in. One on a Coast Guard boat here in the harbor. We need to find out more about that one, and one at Winter Wonderland. So we even got that. Early January, all are invited to the annual Epiphany held on Sunday, January 7th at noon. This is for the Blessing of the Waters, hosted by St. Demetrios Greek Orthodox Church at D-Dock in front of the Greek restaurant. So that concludes my report. And again, you've got all the departmental reports if you have any comments or questions for staff, we're happy to answer them.
Commissioners, questions? Brian?
Brian, I wanted to again kudos to marketing and whoever. Channel 5 and LA stations covering a lot of coverage outside the area. So I think, and you're right, it was also the fireworks was a benefit for the whole. I was up at a party on the hill on Friday night, and everybody came over and go, oh, look at that. I said, where's that coming? It was down at the harbor. And on Saturday night, I was down in the Keys. And so that was a nice end to all of that. And not too many boats going down through the Keys, I think, just because, you know, it was cold. But that's okay. I think people are a little uncomfortable with what's happened in the past. A number of boats start trying to go down there and then turn around, and it's a little bit of a cluster. But I'm glad we had as many boats, because that was one of the things that I think we were down to 15, I think, through COVID and whatever. So obviously that's come back up, and congratulations to everybody
and
involved.
And then some. Yeah,
everybody
thank
involved.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm speaking somewhat out of turn. I should have done this under board communications, but I had an opportunity to go to the Poinsettia Awards that are held by the Chamber every year. And one of our harbor tenants, Jeff Morehouse, was an award winner. Jeff's amazing. His volunteer work is crazy. I think it took 5-10 minutes for them to run through all of the various volunteer efforts that he's done. But also importantly, Jeff really put in a lot of good words about the harbor and how wonderful everything is down here, what a good job the staff is doing, and how he's just really enjoyed being here the years that he's been here and seeing the improvements. So it was very nice to hear that, and a lot of head nodding in the audience from people in agreement. So it was really nice to get those kudos.
Yeah, that
was a large event.
That was a fun annual event hosted by the Chamber, recognizing variety of businesses and so on. And Commissioner Rainey joined us for that event as well. And we were, as you recall, last year's award winners for the Jewel Key Award for the improvements at Harbor Village. So this year, that means we got to present the award to this year's winner. So I got a chance to do that towards the end of the program I think it was last week. It's a little bit of a blur.
Clearly, Tony and I never pass up a free lunch.
And speaking of improvements, I just wanted to, all the departments are doing great, but I was struck by the public safety report, in part because in the time that I've been on the board, the professionalization of the public safety staff here and the work and service provided to the harbor and beyond, it just needs to be commended. So just a great report, really interesting to see the number of calls that they're responsible for.
We will pass that along. Pat's back there in the audience. Thank you so much.
I'll add, Brian Brennan brought up the press coverage. It was nice to open the VC Star and see Ventura Port District on the front page there. That was nice coverage also. And then I had some local friends talking about the Portside Patio and how much fun it was, how lively it was. You know, they remarked that you usually go by and it's a big patio and you can't envision what it was like. Well, they now got the vision of what that Portside Patio can be. So that was great that it filled out. Dredging. We had a breakthrough on dredging.
I guess one other event, since we're listing them all, I forgot. We, Chair and Todd and I, attended a city press conference last week.
That's right.
With Congressman Salud Carbajal, and I believe it was the Department of the Interior.
Secretary of the Interior. Yeah.
Who came and did a tour of the Water Pure Project, and then press conference following. That fell on Friday at 3 o'clock, right before Parade of Lights got underway. So we were happy to be able to participate and support the city in that.
Yeah. Not in the report, but will be next month because it's December. But on the 13th, the California Coastal Commission moved our dredging permit to consent calendar, which is the best place to be. And it was swept on through. Staff did, I won't say spring something on us, but they did ask for two more plans that they want us to roll into the final permit. However, I just before coming in here, I got an email saying that the permit is on its way for Brian to sign in the physical copy. So we have our permit, and therefore we will be advertising in our Harbor Dredging effective Sunday, Christmas Eve.
Yeah. And Todd, this is for Inner Harbor.
Well, the permit allows, the permit covers both Inner and Outer Harbor Dredging. The amendment we were seeking is to allow Inner Harbor Dredging when the river mouth is closed, which all of the agencies responsible have agreed. So yeah, that's the big win.
Yeah, this is something Todd's been working on for probably 30 months, I think, at this point, along in directing our consultant, RINCON consultants, to support these changes. It's become unpredictable to predict the prior terms of the permit will occur right when the dredge company has to be here doing the channel. So that just we knew that wasn't going to work moving forward. But to change a permit that's this complicated and intricate from the science perspective and everything else took quite a lift. So we're happy to be there, and kudos to Todd and the RINCON team.
Yeah, great job persistently navigating through that bureaucracy and getting what we needed.
Persistence is the key word.
Yeah,
that is true.
All right, I think we can close the staff and general manager report, and we will move on to the best place, which is our consent agenda. We have now one item on the consent agenda. It is out-of-town travel requests. There are for Todd Mitchell and myself to go to CMANC or the California Maritime and Navigation
Consortium.
And then we're going to potentially send Jessica Rausch and Jessica Snipes to a risk management academy, which I think is great. I told Jessica I'm going to quiz her when she comes back, so we can all do risk management a little better. Commissioner,
I move the item.
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Let me pause for that public comment. Don't see anybody in the room wants to talk about the consent agenda. Anybody online, Todd?
No comments from me.
All right, so we have no comments online. I have a motion and a second. So all in favor of approving the consent agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. Todd, I'll see you in Washington, D.C.
All right,
so we pulled item B from the consent agenda, so I think we want to tackle that as, do you want to tackle that as item number one?
Yes, please. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and start there.
Yeah, my comment, and this was really an outgrowth of a discussion last month,
right,
which total agreement with, that there are occasions where travel has to take place before our approval. Just to have an issue with the language that's in there that uses the word shall. And a shall means we must. In my interpretation, I don't think it's the correct word. And it probably should be may. It would be an easy correction. There may be some other alternatives. But my point is, I don't think that that's the correct term to use when you're bringing back, in theory, a discretionary action to the board.
I understand. Commissioners, any other thoughts on that? So,
Resolution 3491.
It's the change to the, not the resolution itself, but
no,
it's the policy.
Exhibit A of the policy.
Okay, thank you.
It is on
page one of exhibit
51.
Yeah. 50. There you go. Yeah. So, Commissioner, a one word change from shall to may.
Yeah.
That's just a suggestion, right, or it could be shall consider. I mean, there's different ways to go.
Sure.
Yes. Either works for me.
Yeah. I think that makes sense because it supposes a action that hasn't yet been taken. So that makes sense.
Commissioners, any other thoughts on that?
I just want to make sure I understand where the shall is. Is it under one?
So look on page 49.
49 or 50?
So here it says,
oh, you're
in these cases, approval shall be granted.
Yeah, 49.
What Chris is saying is the board should have the discretion to...
may be considered, may, one of those.
Right.
Okay, because there is a shall under number one, and I just wanted to make sure. I wasn't looking at the red line version. So.
Probably simplest to just change shall to may. Mm-hmm. So I would make the motion that we do so.
Second.
Only under two, correct? Only under the red line.
Yeah, but in both, there's the
correct
commissioner and.
Well, there's a policy for employees and there's a policy for commissioners.
Who duplicate
that, that appears in both.
Yeah. All right.
This is a roll call vote.
Because it's a resolution. So any public comments before we move on here? No public comments online.
No public comments
on this item. So the motion is that we change the presented language from approval shall be granted to approval may be granted. Let's do a roll call vote on that, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
4-5-0.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to move on to what was listed as standard agenda item number one, which is a presentation from the city's Public Works Department on road conditions and managed parking. I'd like to welcome Peter, Jeff, and the Public Works Director. So thank you for joining us tonight.
And as Phil comes up, I want to congratulate him. I think he officially wraps up his career with the city, unless they got you to extend it again. So I think at the end of December, Phil is officially retiring from the city of Ventura. So this may be one of his last formal presentations in a public meeting, possibly. So welcome. Is the button and is the button pressed on your mic there? There we go.
There we go. Thank you very much. Yes, it's a week from Friday. It'll be my last day, and this is my last formal presentation. But thank you for having us this evening, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, I'm Phil Nelson, the city's Public Works Director, and I'm joined by Peter Shade, who's the Assistant Director and City Engineer, and Jeff Herford, who's our Transportation Manager. Thank you for inviting us tonight to come talk about, I know, two topics very important to all of us, parking and streets. And I'm going to end there, and I'm going to pass it off to Jeff, who will cover what we've got going in parking. And of course, when we're done, we're happy to take any questions you might have.
I'm just going to cover Jeff Herford, Transportation Manager. Nice to meet you all and see you all, commissioners. I'm just going to be talking about the harbor. I don't know if you guys have heard, there's a lot of other parking things going on downtown, so I'm going to leave it just in the port. Been working with Todd and Brian for several months now on your managed parking program. And the caveat there is we have Spinnaker Drive going through the middle of the harbor there. So at the city street, based on the study, the parking study that was done by ATE, we want to go ahead and charge for parking on Spinnaker, which makes sense to us. And so we're in agreement with that and want to work with the port on this. So there's a couple things we do need to do on our side, which is the first one is a shared parking agreement with the port and the city. So we have a draft form of that. We've gone back and forth a couple times. I just caught up with our city attorney's office today. They've gone a couple times with, I think, Reed, maybe with. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that. That's going to spell out some revenue sharing, also some maintenance agreements, and some other things and what happens to the money. The other thing that we need to do is we need to amend the city's ordinance, Municode, to allow paid parking on Spinnaker Drive. Currently, it just allows parking in the downtown specific area, the downtown parking district. So that's another ordinance change that we need to do. It's a little bit trickier because we're going to probably be going to our parking authority. So we're putting some thought behind that. Mm. But with all that being said, we're targeting March 26th to go ahead and take that to council. If you'd like to attend that meeting, we're going to be talking about downtown parking as well. So I figured we'd have a big parking evening that night. We're going to be also talking about the new downtown parking structure.
What was the date of that again?
March 26th.
March 26th.
Council meetings are moving to Tuesdays at 5, if you guys didn't already hear. So historically, it's been Mondays at 6. The dates are all confusing to me right now still, too. The other thing I didn't put on here in the bullet point is Julie Dixon, who's the parking consultant for the harbor. She's also a parking consultant for the city. So as you guys move forward with your program, I think there's going to be some efficiencies there because we're also going to be looking at increase in, you know, equipment, parking permit programs. So I think there could be some, you know, give and take there, that lessons learned from you guys, from us, as we implement our program as well. So I'm looking forward to the partnership with the board on that. So that's what I have. I guess we can go to the streets, or we can take questions later, I think. So, Peter.
Yeah, the easy stuff. So, I'm sure as Brian's been reporting back to you, we've been communicating back and forth on pavement over the last year or so, due to some concern with some of the street conditions within the Port District jurisdiction. And I thought that, although I know that just like every residential landowner is more concerned about the street in front of their house, I thought it'd be good to talk a little more broadly about the pavement management plan the city has. It was last spring that Phil Cody Stoltz, who some of you probably know with work on the coastal areas, and I presented the pavement management plan to our council. So these slides are largely excerpts from that presentation, and it will take us through just kind of the overall pavement issue that we have with the city. So here's an overall view of the city that, of course, includes the Port District in the lower left-hand side. And it just lays out kind of all the street areas, including all the designations of types of streets that we have. So mostly we think of the streets within the city as arterials, collectors, and residential. And in the case of the Port District, Spinnaker is really the main collector outside of Harbor, which is an arterial. And then the rest of the streets would be residential. So as it's noted here at the top of the slide, we have 704 street lane miles, 306 street centerline miles, 26 alley lane miles, and overall 66 million square feet of pavement. So looking at the budget that we have, and this hasn't changed a lot over the last few years, and we don't expect it to change a lot over the next few years. There will be a gradual increase due to in gas tax and SB1 as those revenues do increase slightly every year. But reporting what we have this year, we have $4.6 million in dollars for CIP projects. That's gas tax and SB1 funding, and the city allocates $1.7 million to public works operations from Measure O and general fund. So of the 4.6 million, we've divided that up into slurry seals and cape seals of 1 million, 3.6 million in overlay projects. And then in operations, we have $100,000 in pavement alley maintenance, 300,000 that goes to all the materials required to do this maintenance. And then 1.3 million a year in the operations budget, which covers pothole repair and crack seals. Of course, potholes are done mostly during the winter time and following the winter rains, and then all the staff time and overhead for equipment that we have for our operations staff. So in summary, the take home is we get about $6.3 million a year total for pavement management and maintenance, and that translates into about 700,000 square feet of overlay and about 750,000 square feet of slurry seal annually. And that is of the 66 million square feet of pavement. So doing the math, just so it's clear, the addition of the 750,000 and 700,000, which is, you know, just slightly less than 1.5 million, is about 2% of the overall 66 million square feet. So we're able to do 2%. And again, just sort of, you know, in turning that denominator and numerator around, that would be 50 years in order to do the whole inventory. So the funding that we have, unfortunately, is not adequate to keep the pavement that we have in the condition that we would like to see it in. And I know that you're all aware of that, if not around the Port District, just driving around town. So of that funding, the allocation, we are currently spending 60% for arterials, 20% for collectors, and 20% for residential. Now, the way that we do it, and I'll share in a minute this a little bit more detail, but you'll see that Spinnaker is divided up into two reaches. One, the area close to Arbor Boulevard, which is in much worse shape. the end of Spinnaker is in much better shape. And you'll see in the payment management plan, we actually have a treatment and money in the plan to treat that end of Spinnaker, which is arguably a better part of Spinnaker. And the reason is that what we try to do is prioritize to prevent next level maintenance. So pavement condition index, which I'll explain a little bit about in a moment, if it's below a certain number, then we will need to do a full street repair of a pavement resurfacing. If we can catch it before then, we can do a slurry, which is a much less expensive treatment. So our strategy is to try to catch it when we can do the lower cost treatment, and not wait until we have to have the higher cost. But obviously, as you know, some streets have already exceeded that condition, and we need to develop funding in order to address that pavement that needs to be resurfaced. So here's a slide that shows the pavement condition overall in the city. You can see that the red is very poor, the yellow is poor, and good is in the green, and then blue is very good. So the again, if streets are in the good or very good, they can be slurried as part of maintenance, try to maintain that condition. Once they go into the poor, very poor, then they need to be resurfaced. And so you can see that although we do have a fair amount of green and blue, there's also quite a bit of yellow and red that really need to be resurfaced as part of its treatment. And Spinnaker, Olivas Park Drive, are a couple of those areas as well. And here, the next few slides are just showing what we have planned on the pavement management plan for the next 5 years. This slide is showing a slurry seal. As I mentioned before, you can see at the end of Spinnaker, there's that short reach from about Island Packers till the end. We're showing that we will be looking at slurrying that in fiscal year 25-26. And then there's no other slurrying planned in the Harbor District. Harbor Boulevard between Leaves Park Drive up to Seaward is also being slurried. So you can see what we're planning in the five-year period. And again, this is based on that $6.3 million of expected revenue every year. And here's the list of areas that will be overlaid. As far as the Harbor District goes, we are doing the Navigator, and that includes although not shown here, this is part of the pavement management plan, but through communication with Brian and our public works director looking for funding, where we expanded that project to include all the way till the end of Navigator, next support site, as well as Anchors Way up to Schooner. So that's a little bit more than what's shown in this slide. And then here are the streets that our operations group does is planning to do work on. Generally speaking, beyond the crack sealing and the pothole filling, they do also pavement resurfacing. They are limited due to the public code, certain size projects, and so they typically are not large projects. And they're focused on mainly residential with a few collectors. The next two slides get into really where our needs that are unfunded. And you can see in this slide all of the overlay areas that are in that, you know, in that poor and very poor category that really we need to look at overlay and not just a slurry seal. Of course, you can see how that's widespread throughout the city. Spinnaker from Olivas Park or from Harbor Boulevard all the way to Island Packers is one of those reaches that we don't have funding yet identified to do that work, as well as Harbor Boulevard from Olivas Park Drive up to Schooner. And here's another map that shows unfunded areas where we have in that blue and green categories where we want to do slurry work. If we're able to find money to do this work before it ends up into the poor and very poor category, then we can extend the life of that pavement. Otherwise, it'll be continued to degrade until such point as it'll be in that poor, very poor, and then we'll have to look at finding even more money to deal with the reconstruction of the road with an overlay. So in summary, here are the reaches of the main streets in the Port District that I believe is probably of greatest concern to your board. Anchors Way, Navigator to Schooner, as a PCI of 20. That was a reach that we didn't originally have in the plan that's been added. Anchors Way, Schooner to Beachmont, that's the area that, of course, that we drive by to get to this office. That has a fairly good PCI, and again, these are 2022 PCIs, so if things change over last winter, it didn't take in that into account, but it was calculated as an 86 PCI. That reach could use slurrying to maintain that condition. That's currently unfunded. Navigator Anchors Way to the end near port side, that was again not included in the plan but has been since added. And then Navigator Spinnaker to Anchors Way, that short reach has been Navigator Spinnaker to Anchors Way, that's a longer reach that was originally part of the plan, that's still part of the design. Schooner Harbor to Anchors Way, that's the short reach from Harbor Boulevard. That also is in pretty good shape. Is also part of the Ventura Water Pure reach. That reach, we think that based on its PCI, should be slurried. That is also currently unfunded. And then Spinnaker Harbor Boulevard to the Island Packers, which we all know is a pretty poor reach of pavement. Needs resurfacing, and that's unfunded. And then lastly, as I mentioned, Spinnaker is in the pavement management plan to be slurried in FY26. The project that we are currently working the design of, it's being combined with a couple other reaches in the city, Valentine in front of Winco. That's the reach of road between the highway or 101 on-ramp and close to where the CHP office is. Mm-hmm. As well as North Bank, which is that reach of pavement between the off-ramp at Johnson and Johnson Drive. And we're currently waiting for a Caltrans permit for that reach. And once we receive that permit for the North Bank reach, then we are bundling all of it together and going to bid that project out. We expect it to be able to be bid out probably in January or February, depending on how quickly we get response back from Caltrans, which would put us, based on getting a good bid and council approving it, get us probably resurfacing Navigator, both reach of Navigator and the short reach of Anchors Way, probably in the late summer, early fall is my guess. So with that, I know we have Phil and Jeff here too, but we'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Yeah, I can go back.
Peter, Jeff, thank you for that update. I'll turn over to commissioners. Brian, question?
Peter, thank you for that. I wonder if you go back to this slide. Oh,
before this
one right here. Yeah. thank you for adding is that a 20, which is, I mean, I'm glad to see, I guess, that it is being added, and I don't want to be overly, bearing on this, but I do want to make sure that in the very beginning you showed slides that was red and showed it was really poor condition. Are we taking care of all that poor condition? Because there was slide right after that
showed in those two reaches.
Yes. Okay, that's good to know. And I'm just last question because we're looking for funding. Was Portside when did they put money into street repairs or street improvements? Because I know I thought we had Mike Soderman here once who had talked about they were wanting to see some resurfacing done, mm-hmm. that they had paid, put some money in a fund somewhere. So I'm hoping that's somewhere that possibly could be found.
I'm not aware of any funding that they put in toward pavement.
Yeah, the funding that I'm aware of. Now they did make improvements to Anchors Way Drive, which is probably why your index is better. For the section that's closer here that were part of mitigation measures, related to the development of Portside. The monies that they were putting, that they put in as mitigation, was for the development of a new fire station. And that money is yet to be, I think, formally allocated, but I believe it is to provide fire services to the harbor area.
That's right. I think they took care of that the other night at about 12:30 at night, in the morning, excuse me, but thank you. Yeah. So I just recognize that certainly that's been a problem. Then is Water Pure responsible for any kind of repaving of some of this? Or is that where you said looking for funds? I mean, they're sort of, are they encumbered to bring the street back? I don't want to say bring it back to the condition it was in before they started, because that's awful. But I mean, in terms of reconditioning the streets after they've done their work?
Yeah, any damage that they cause will need to be repaired by their contractor.
Oh, only damage.
To the condition. Yes.
Okay. Well, outside of 20, I don't. So there, you could damage the road any more than it is, but
right. They're not. There's no. Well, and part of the specifications is for them to stay off of Navigator and the Anchor's Way from Schooner South. So they're only gonna. They should only be using that route from Harbor Boulevard along Schooner, and then Anchor's Way from there to Beachmont.
Okay.
And the reach, of course, they'll be doing trenching for a pipeline. All of that will need to be repaired as part of the project.
Okay. Thank you.
Others? That stretch that's got the PCI of 40 on Spinnaker is clearly the worst stretch. And how many cars do we get on that a year?
1.5 million.
1.5 million cars, and so it's going to degrade a lot faster. That is not planned until 27 right now?
We don't have that in the pavement management plan.
Not at all, so it's beyond 27.
Yeah, so this exhibit that shows all of the areas around town, although 40 is bad, and there even are worse streets in town than Spinnaker, unfortunately. So unfortunately there is no funding for it planned. We did look at, as part of the analysis, didn't make it into the pavement management plan, but we did look at what if we had more money, and part of that was our pavement condition index overall of the city is around 65, and what we made as a goal was getting that up to 70. In order to get up to 70 PCI, we would need about double the amount of money that we currently have in our budget. So, and when we looked at that, Spinnaker was in the first 5 years, if we had that additional funding, that we did include that reach in the project, or in that work that could be done in the 5 year period, but we had to base the pavement management plan on what was realistic funding, and that's the current funding that we get from the state and Measure O and the general fund.
Are there opportunities for additional funding, additional grants, additional income?
We have heard people say that there's money in the infrastructure bill. We have not seen anything that indicated there would be street resurfacing as part of that. But we continue to look. We have lobbyists that keep an eye on all the grants as they're coming out. And if there are any, if you guys hear of any, let us know. We certainly would be interested in finding more about that. But at this point, and you probably have read in the newspaper, there seems to be articles now and again, recently, the state looked at the funding for gas tax and SB1 due to electrification of cars, mm-hmm. showing how much that will go down over the next 10 or 15 years. So I think the state really does need to look at another funding mechanism for pavement management, pavement maintenance. But at this point, this is what we have.
Yeah, that's not a near-term fix. When you guys come up with your plan, I assume you you look at the usage, right? Because some of the items that are red, and I can understand why the red would be a priority, but some of those that are red are residential areas going to get a lot less usage than Spinnaker with those million plus vehicles a year. So how is that, how do you take that into account, the usage and the other economic impacts, payback for the city?
We look at a couple of things. It's not really based on economic payback. It's based on, typically it's based on the speed of travel, as well as the volume of traffic. So like for instance, Victoria, you know, that's depending on the reach, it's 40 or 45 miles an hour. And so that's a road that we would be, all things equal, more concerned about than a road of the same PCI that was, say, 30 miles an hour, because the impact to the vehicles and the drivers is not as significant and as risky at lower speeds. So those are a couple of the factors that are looked at in prioritizing what streets get the money first, and looking at not just a straight PCI, just, you know, doing the worst first, but looking at the worst and looking at the conditions related to what the uses of the road are. You know, we've got, I think it's McGrath that's shown kind of in the middle of the slide, in the industrial area. That's a slow trafficked area, and we don't have any plans to repave that anytime soon either. So, you know, so there's certain aspects that we need to look at where the highest volume and the speeds are the highest to look at first.
Yeah, what I was trying to introduce is the thought that economic impact to the city. So you talked about Victoria, clearly a major commercial area for the city, right? And a lot of traffic every day on that. But similarly, the Port District, right? We bring a lot of people, a lot of local residents, but also a lot of people from out of town. And, you know, it's the face of Ventura that they see when they come down Spinnaker. And we want them in a good mood when they come here because we want them to spend their money here. So somehow getting that into the equation or into the thought process, I think, might be something to consider. Brian?
Thank you. And I apologize, I didn't ask it earlier. I know we're talking about some type of parking management program on Spinnaker. I mean, rather than going down there and just putting stripes on the road on old pavement, I mean, are there any plans? I mean, is that, I don't know, has there been any talks about what would be planned as part of that? Any kind of coating or anything going on the top other than just marking out parking spots? Because I see that as perhaps not to start a precedent, but, you know, if we're looking for money, I mean, I would say this, I don't mind pay to park up at the fairgrounds when I know that trash is being picked up or something's happening up there. If, you know, part of our marketing could be, hey, you know, going to improve the street itself. And this, you can see your money being used for something. So maybe we're able to use some of that as leverage to get a grant or something somewhere down the road. But I guess I'm just a little worried about, you know, getting all excited about a parking management program in streets in such bad condition.
Sure. I don't know if Jeff wants to comment on that, but the parking management agreement.
Part of the shared, we were just talking about this today, is the revenue that does come into the city could be used, or part of the shared agreement is that it would go back into the harbor area, whether that's with street repaving. And I don't know what the projections are, but it could be to spruce up the area, just like in downtown.
Yeah.
The money that's the revenue from that also goes downtown,
right,
for safety, lighting, new parking amenities, those kind of things. So I envision the same thing happening here.
Great.
To marking, we haven't talked about the specifics of that yet. Right. I don't imagine putting stripes on the road. It's going to be a license plate based system. So when you park, put your license plate in and do it that way.
Hey, Jeff, stay up there if you could, please. Could we go back to Jeff's slide showing the transportation management, the next steps? I think it was the last slide that you had. I was curious about timeline on some of these, especially the agreement that we've been talking about. Any idea what, let's see, the shared parking agreement with the city and the We've been working together for a bit. What's the next step? What's the timeline for that?
So I think we've done a couple different back and forths. The goal is to go March 26th to have council adopt that.
Okay, that's the date. Yeah.
And then also along with that to have the muni code, the ordinance change to allow paid parking on Spinnaker. We have to actually put that in our meeting.
Okay, all of that will be presented at March 26th.
Correct.
Okay.
And hopefully it's on consent, but I'm not sure.
given Jeff's schedule, I don't see why we couldn't bring, once the agreement is in final form for both the board and for the council, that the board could take action on it prior to that date, because it'll need to be approved by both bodies.
Right. Okay.
Good.
All right. Jackie, you got?
Oh, just a quick question about the pavement. Have you noticed the pavement deteriorating more quickly based on climate change issues?
No, I wouldn't say that, but I would say that that deterioration of pavement becomes much more obvious when we get rainfall. And I think a lot of the areas that didn't look great, but we weren't as concerned about before last winter, really degraded quite significantly through the winter. All of those areas that we had cracked pavement, that when it's dry, when we are in a drought, wasn't getting a lot of rain, it was doing okay as it was. But with all that rain we got last winter, all that water got in underneath the pavement, you know, really degraded much quicker. So I think the story is that with water, with rainfall, it really can cause a degradation quite quickly. I don't think that really has anything to do with climate change necessarily, but again, if we get another good year like we're having tonight, you know, we could see a lot big impacts again to our pavement condition.
So that Spinnaker could drop from a 40 to a 20
pretty quickly. Drop. Yeah.
And it still wouldn't be on any list for...
Well, one of the improvements that we're making at the city, and we're just rolling it out right now, is we've gotten a new platform called Road AI. It's a artificial intelligence platform. It's used with a cell phone, so you can mount it in the dash of your car, of a car, and then by driving around, you can assess the pavement condition. Previously, we had to hire a consultant, or I suppose years ago we had somebody maybe on staff that could do it as well, to manually assess the pavement condition, you know, and that's looking at, you know, at rutting, at different types of cracking, and it's doing a manual calculation of all that to come up with a PCI number. So what was happening was a lot of the streets, a lot of the most of the residential streets was looking at the age of, since it was paved initially, and then using degradation curves to determine what the payment. Now, that's not really, it probably wasn't excessively off, but it really wasn't accurate either. And so by using this Road AI, we're going to be able to go out more often. We're not sure if we'll be hitting all the streets every year, but when somebody calls and when we get a call from Brian saying, hey, Spinnaker's really looking bad out here, guys, you know, we'll be able to bring that platform out, look at it and assess how the PCI has changed over the duration since the last time we've looked at it, to be able to get an idea of kind of what's happening. Obviously, visually, you can see, you know, this isn't exactly rocket science. You can see what the condition is to some degree, but having that numerical objective pavement condition index is really where we plug it into a program called StreetSaver. And then that helps us prioritize projects citywide.
So Spinnaker could move up the priority list.
I would probably say that I don't see it happening in this 5-year period, but it's, you know, we certainly, you know, I think the plan is to update the payment management plan every year or thereabouts. And in order to be able to do that, we needed to add this Road AI platform in order to get new data on a frequent basis. And so part of that process will be at some level looking at a reshuffling of the deck. Now, I doubt that it's going to reshuffle. I mean, if something is bad and needs to be resurfaced now, I doubt that somehow miraculously it's going to improve to the point where something else sort of slips in its place. So I don't want to give the impression that, you know, that all the projects that are currently slated for overlay in the next 5 years are somehow going to become look better than Spinnaker. But there could be a possibility of some projects shuffling and some projects coming in that have gotten very bad over the past year that we weren't aware of when we went to council last spring.
Because as I understand what you said earlier, the 40 is a 2022 number.
Right.
Before or after the winter rains?
Before.
So we could actually be lower than a 40 right now.
It likely is, yes.
And then we'll get more rains this winter as projected, which means we'll drop even lower.
Right.
And we're still nowhere in the five-year plan, regardless of how low that drops.
And all those projects that are in the plan that were low before 2022 storms have degraded.
And I completely understand that you guys are on a treadmill and you're just trying
to. It is about funding.
Yes.
That's where we're
at. I'm just wondering if there is a point in time where it becomes an emergency situation and what would mark that?
Unfortunately, it is a zero-sum game at the city. We, you know, if there were more funding allocated to pavement, then it would have to come from, you know, something else like fire or parks or public art or, you know, police, you know, working with the homeless and all that. I mean, it's really, there are so many needs out there that you know, there's no way to add something without taking something away.
So, as Peter indicated, we get about half as much money as we believe we need to really maintain the streets. And beginning in April with the presentation on the pavement, we gave a series of presentations to council on streets, sidewalks, ADA ramps, storm sewer system, and then most recently facilities. And it's really come to my conclusion that there isn't going to be any revenues, sales tax, property tax, those kinds of things that are going to come even close to bridging the gap. And what's really needed is some sort of an infrastructure bond. I know it's not a popular topic and nobody really wants to go there, but I don't see another way to do this because we're talking about very large numbers. And even if we decided to completely close all the other city departments, which of course is absurd to even consider, but even if we did, that still is going to be not enough probably to really get us out of the hole that we're in. And we're not alone. Peter indicated the PCI for the city is around 65. That's the state average. Is around 65. And there's an annual needs assessment that's done every 2 years statewide that really quantifies the whole problem statewide. And we're billions of dollars. The state is billions of dollars of short in tackling this. So we're like many other communities. We're often compared to Camarillo or a Thousand Oaks. And they have a sales tax base with the outlet malls and some other retail that we just don't have. And in talking to them, they get a lot more general fund contributed to their programs than we do, simply for that reason. They also don't have some of the other challenges within the city that we do, enjoying a 150-plus-year-old city. So they've got some expenses that we have that they don't have, and they have more tax revenue. And so that's why you see better conditions in those cities. It's a tough spot. It really is. And we wrestle with it all the time. And as Peter said, now with this new tool, we'll be able to reevaluate our plan more frequently and make those adjustments if they're warranted. I wish I had a better answer, really do. Believe me, we would love nothing more than to pave all these streets.
Bill, can you?
Speaking of which, has any of the Legislative Analyst Office or the American Public Works Association or the Government Finance Office Association looked at the impact of the electrification on SB1 and the gas tax, and quite possibly the federal gas tax, because I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not going to increase. No. And so, you know, my question is, with the infrastructure and the need and doing the projections, is anyone basically, and I like the idea of the bond, but it seems to me that by 2026, we're going to have to refigure all of this out, because it's not going to, what are we going to do with people who drive electric cars? Is it going to be is it going to be federal? Is it going to be state? Is it going to be municipal? I mean, and how can it be equitable if Camarillo is allowed to tax electrical cars so that they could put more for infrastructure and someone else doesn't? Is any of the professional organizations looking at this?
Great question. I know APWA has been at the national level visiting with different representatives, and this is one of the topics that they brought up, is how at the federal level that needs to be looked at. I also know that at a recent Cal Cities conference that I was at, Caltrans identified the need, knew that we needed a new strategy for how we fund all of the pavement maintenance, but didn't offer a lot of specifics on exactly how they were doing that, other than the people were working on that, and that they were trying to, I'm not sure who they were working with at the legislature, but trying to come up with an alternative strategy, alternative plan, and recognizing we don't have 10 years to figure this out. We need to come up with an answer in the next few years, especially as we see EVs really, you know, becoming more popular. That's a big concern. Luckily, still, the gas tax revenues we get have been going up every year, not as large as they used to. A lot of people forget the gas tax is a fixed amount. It's not a percentage of the gas price. And so that's going to be pretty static based on the amount of gallons sold. But thankfully, at least for now, it's going up a little bit each year, still projected to do so, but pretty soon that's going to stop. But answer to your question, yes, that is being looked at and worked on.
I think SB1 actually indexed our gas tax finally. For years, it was flat. Mm-hmm. Had to, by an act, the legislature be increased. Now, at least it's indexed to a CPI. It's small, but at least it's going to grow a little bit, right? Yeah. Theoretically. But I don't know if you remember this, Phil, but it might be interesting. We went through regular studies for what our maintenance needs were. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in preparation for SB1, I believe all the cities and counties had to gather all their information and then shoot that up to Sacramento, and it was going to be used, right, to kind of decide how that was going to be fashioned. I think the county's number was well over 100 million that was needed. But do you remember that number? I'm just kind of curious.
I don't recall the number.
Okay. No. It was huge. I mean, it was huge. It's a number that kind of he's been throwing out a lot of discouraging statistics, one of which was that they only do 2% every year, right? And it was in that realm, right, of a number that was necessary. And so if you think about it in those terms, it's a lot more than doubling of what we currently get to really get us into a shape that people would be happy with.
When you take into account all of the residential, local, and then you look at the whole state highway system, the shortfall is in the billions with the needs assessment study comes up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a staff follow-up question. Actually, could you go to the slide that showed which things are funded and which things are unfunded? I think it might have been I think it was almost the last slide.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay.
So, I mean, the main areas, and by the way, Phil, thank you and to the team for adding to the Navigator project. We appreciate your, you know, we know that the funding wasn't specifically there for that, and you had to find it elsewhere to extend that all the way to Portside, to the west, and north along Anchors Way Drive up to Schooner. So those are big pickups, I think, in terms of improvement. The areas here that are identified as unfunded, that are either slurry or resurfacing, in today's dollars, do you know what, given the width of those streets and the length of those streets and each of those categories, what kinds of monies we're talking about? And I know everything's subject to a public bidding process, mm-hmm. and so on, but in terms of what you've been seeing.
Yeah, the two slurry reaches, that being Schooner and Anchors Way from Schooner to Beachmont, that's I asked Cody to look at that this morning, and it's about $150,000 to slurry those two reaches. The resurfacing Spinnaker, I don't have a number. I'm sure that would be in the millions,
mm-hmm.
probably 2 to 3 million is my guess, because it's a pretty long reach and it's, you know, it's pretty wide with a median and some at the beginning. I don't have a number for that.
Okay.
But that would be quite a bit more than the slurrying reaches.
Okay. And then maybe just a comment for the board. I mean, it's always the board's right to advocate for, you know, for Spinnaker Drive to be advanced, regardless of the, I mean, they have to present their plan based on the, you know, the analysis that they perform. But Vice Chair, as you point out, I mean, the conditions have probably worsened. They're going to start worsening again. We got 1.5 million cars, and we really appreciate the detail in providing how that works. But it's always the right of the board to advocate on behalf of the port. It's a major visitor destination, along with the commercial fishing activity. The city's own water treatment facility is on Spinnaker Drive, so there's a lot of different activities that occur on the street, and it's probably only gotten worse since that 40 number, and will continue to do so. And this really, as I think, as you put it, Spinnaker Drive, or maybe Chair, as you put it, it's the front yard of the entire harbor, and it speaks to the harbor as soon as you drive into that street. So that would be my suggestion.
If I may, Chair, you'd mentioned earlier economic development being a consideration, and certainly that's important. Because of the limited funding we have, and just as we've explained, our analysis is really risk-based. Trying to reduce the city's exposure to litigation liability, accidents, public safety. And so that's why we really focus on volume and traffic speeds. But that doesn't mean that's the only criteria, as you pointed out. The measuring the volumes and the speeds, obviously very easy. The PCI, we've got a good system for that. We're engineers. We like, you know, something that you can easily calculate and defend. Economic development gets a little squishier as to how do you measure that? How do you compare that with the other areas of the city? But having said that, and as Mr. Pendleton just pointed out, if your board would like to communicate, of course, to the city council, your concerns and reasoning and make your arguments for why you feel those areas should be paved, you know, we welcome that conversation and we're happy to do whatever our city council wants. This is just how we approach it, what we propose to them. So. I just wanted to leave that there. We certainly by no means would look at any kind of communication you wanted to make other than just good public conversation and deciding what's best for our city.
And I promise this will be the last comment and question. I do think, Phil, the idea of the advocacy is a great idea, but I think also we should bring perhaps something to the table. And I was surprised. You mentioned about $150,000 perhaps just to do a slurry. Which maybe when we know some of this is going on or when they're here or doing that work, our ability to look at our capital improvement, look at our reserves and say, you know, if there's anything we're going to spend, certainly maybe we bring something to the table to be able to do that. Only because I can only see less and less money as the years go on, going into the fund and more costs, the costs going up. So our ability maybe to partner in that, and then if we, again, like I said, if we become advocates and say, look, we're going to bring something to the table, maybe the city can match us, maybe we're able to get some of this other stuff done. So I'll leave it there. But I think that kind of thinking we're going to have to start looking at much differently than saying, hey, when are we scheduled? Oh, or not really scheduled, and maybe not ever scheduled on some of that. And, you know, over the years, I always thought it's just a schedule. You just wait till it comes along. And certainly I appreciate the comment about the risk and liability. As a taxpayer, certainly I appreciate that, and got to have some protocols on how you measure that. But I think we're going to have to look at it differently down here also. So thank you. Thank you, Mike.
The statistic that sticks in my head is the 2% per year in 50 years. What's the average lifespan for an asphalt road?
About 30 years.
About 30 years. So we're kind of not quite doubling that, but yeah, that's tough.
30 years if properly maintained. You can do the slurry seals during that 30-year period, which we're really not able to do right now.
I understand. I think good discussion amongst the commission. Should open it up for any other staff comments, public comments. Public comments online.
No public comment. No public comment. Mr. Sonneman, he raised his hand, he lowered his hand. That's okay. Mr. Sonneman, you can speak.
Well, I have a blank screen, so I can't see you now, but I listened in this evening, and I really appreciate the discussion of the between the city and the Port District. I've been involved with the Portside project for since 2000, and I think this discussion is the most encouraging thing I've heard with regards to the streets in a long, long time. And I think it's a good start. And for those of us who have made a major capital investment in the harbor, which I believe is the crown jewel of the city, I think it's an appropriate conversation to have going forward. I saw your monies, and, you know, $6 million, that's not a lot of money. if you could spend it all in the harbor, it's not a lot of money. So, you know, we've got to put on our thinking caps and figure out how to do things that are long overdue, how to maintain our streets, how to create good public safety and a good positive image for building a better and more traveled and visited harbor, which I believe Ventura Harbor could be the harbor in Ventura County. So those are the comments. I 2024, whatever work gets done on Navigator, that street is other than being black, it could be a dirt road, and the area in between Schooner and Navigator, it's not much better. And we did make a $600,000 investment between the Arundel Barranca Bridge and Parcel 20, and I'm, which required us to go in and rebase the street because the there really wasn't adequate base that met city standards, and so I would hope that WaterPure, whatever they do in those areas where we made a substantial investment in the harbor there, that they would do a little bit more than to just patch it, and I would hope Public Works would. I know they're another department in the city, but I would hope Public Works would keep an eye on that on behalf of the harbor. And those are my comments.
Michael, thank you for joining us. Thanks for those comments. Todd, do we have any other public comments?
We do not.
All right. Well. Close public communications, and I just want to thank Jeff, Peter, and Phil. Thank you for coming and having the dialogue with us. Important topic. Obviously, we spent a lot of time on it. So, and then finally, Phil, I want to wish you well in the retirement. I'm jealous of the amount of time that you're about to get back. So,
thank you.
Yeah, the grin says it all. Yes. So, thank you. All right, we will move on to our. Yeah, good idea. Actually, before we move on, if we could get the slides that they presented sent to all the commissioners, I'd appreciate that. All right, we're going to move on to a discussion of parcel 5. We have a preliminary design to look at. Brian, you want to introduce the topic?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Leif McKay and Nick Deitch to come up and from RRM Design Group, we've been working with since the board's prior direction and evaluation of previous plans they developed, I think, about a decade ago. We've done with them a significant amount of work over the last, I'd say, 4 months or so, to the point that we have a pretty detailed design plan for you tonight. And with that, I'll turn it over to Leif.
Thank you, Brian. Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Commissioners, my name is Leif McKay. I met some of you earlier this year. I think it was a short stack that night, but I'm glad to see you again. I'm here with my esteemed colleague, Nick Deitch. I'm a landscape architect. Nick's an architect. So I'm the fun one. yeah, we've been working hard over the last several months to look at this space here. Everyone's familiar with it. Our charge from general manager and staff was to look at this space, to try to figure out a way to activate it, create a quality community amenity that supported the commercial interests of the village, the district's own plan, programming activities, and the community at large. 10 years plus ago, my firm came up with a landscape master plan that included this area that I think some of you were on that commission at the time. But it, essentially what we came up with at the time, we believed still had merit. What we've done is put some more meat on the bone, spent some more time talking to staff about their specific programming needs to try to advance that idea forward, and that's what we're going to share with you tonight. This is the newest concept that the newest vision that we've come up with. I'll run through a series of plan slides like this, showing you the main features, and then there's some renderings afterwards. I'm not sure if you got all of these in your packet. I think you probably did. So orientation, that's the existing parking lot, that's the existing waterfront promenade. The building to the right, remind me what's in that now. It used to be the barbecue.
Deep Sea Winery.
So it's right at the end of the village, and it's an area that's currently pretty dead, pretty underwhelming. So this is really intended to be a destination that supports the other uses that are going on and not really compete but enhance. Start with the sort of the spine of it, the circulation. So the waterfront promenade would continue through. We've got this nice arcing path that looks like a Amazon smile. That was that a bad reference?
Well, you ruined it.
Sponsorship opportunity. the promenade and the arc are all completely accessible, generously proportioned, so they're comfortable to walk along, to pass strollers. Support larger groups of people as well. And then it's punctuated all the way around. One of those arrows has got a little bit wiggy, but all these points of access all the way around it. So it's a very porous kind of edge. The sort of the center point that it's really oriented around is this stage feature. It backs up to the marina, so it's really oriented for the optimal sort of audience experience. They've got their backs to the wind, backs to the setting sun with the beautiful backdrop. This is really, you can't find a site like this on the water in very many places. This is a really unique opportunity to do something very iconic and special. So it's set up in that in that form with the parking behind it and the water water behind the stage. The lawn that you see there is it's about half to less than half what's there today, and it's really just in the areas that are actually going to be useful for the different programming that the space has. So in this case, when it's a performance, that's a flexible picnic viewing area. It's got a slight slope on it down to the stage. The stage canopy itself, that will be the subject of more design iteration and exploration, but we envision something that's got an iconic quality to it, that's a landmark. You see similar things like this in various jurisdictions, and it's somewhere that gives the park an identity, gets known by that. It's got some architectural style. It's not out of a box. It's something that's got some architectural pizzazz. It could be like that. It could be different, but that the idea is that it's unique. The playground, from the first time we designed this, the playground grew. This whole site's a hair under an acre, so that makes this playground a little less than a quarter of an acre, which is modest for a playground. So this isn't a playground park. The playground is a support amenity for the broader space, and it's about balancing the size of all the uses. We like this particular location because if there's an event going on the stage, the Little Lees can play off to the side and have their own fun and not interrupt what's going on. It's at the end of one of your paseos, so you get a little peekaboo look from in the village. There's something at the end of the view corridor and that you want to get to. And it's very lively and dynamic. So this is one of the key ways we think we can get more life to this place in the downtimes of the week. Near the restroom. There's a picnic area that could be utilized in different ways. The district could choose to make that a reservable space for birthday parties or other things, or it could just be a place where you take your sandwich and have lunch on a weekday. So it's kind of like off to the side a little bit, so it's got somewhat of its own defined space, but it really supports the rest of the uses. This wind barrier idea, we've looked at this in so many ways over the years because it's a real, the prevailing winds are a real detractant for people enjoying this space. So we're aware of it. We've spent lots of time on the ground, and it bums you out when it's, everything else is nice, but there's a raging wind coming in. So it's not conducive to a lot of different uses. We think this could be a way forward with that. It's going to have some significant size to be effective. So we really want to make it more of a, you know, flip the script on a little bit, make it more of a feature and less of a big wall. So one idea could be something like the picture on the right there, which is polycarbonate panels that could be illuminated from the bottom. So it would be a feature sort of art wall or some sort of art wind baffle, perhaps 8 feet tall. And I'll show you in a minute, that whole bottom edge is actually elevated as well. So from the parking lot level, you get about 12 feet up above existing grade. That is a great question that I had not even occurred to me till you just said it, but I don't know. We'd have to look at that. Yeah, good question. Yeah, then you'd be thinking, is a whistle worse than the wind? Yeah.
I know you've done more work in the coastal zone, right?
Yeah.
That barrier you're talking about, I mean, the time to let, that's always a concern of coastal, is the view use through the park constantly. And I worry about this. Obviously,
yeah.
Worry about line of sight.
Yeah, and maybe Brian could talk to that now or later, whenever.
Well, I think just really quickly, I agree, except that this site was intended for development, and this is a type of development. The view corridors on this particular property are the parking lot areas of the portion. You know, we did have a preliminary meeting with Coastal Commission. They didn't see this level of detail yet, but I would say that in terms of when we looked at this whole parcel in the past, there's so many linear feet required for view corridor, and it's met between this park area and Island Packers and between Island Packers and the Yacht Club.
You know, as long as we're talking about this wind feature, it had to be pretty stout feature structurally, but the other thing to think about is a wind tunnel effect, right? You block 90% of the wind and you leave that main entryway open, and that could be your wind tunnel. So we're going to have to consider all of that. The wind structure, absolutely, you're on target. We went and saw the Jaws movie in the summer, and so we're watching this movie with people on the East Coast in shorts and T-shirts, and we're wearing parkas because of that darn wind. And,
Yeah,
so this is a must-have. We just got to think through all these issues of the noise and the wind tunnel effect and Coastal Commission. That's going to be one of the trickier parts.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And we're also trying to attack it in a couple of ways. So you see the trees along the bottom edge there too. They most likely would be cypress or some other large trees, but, you know, 30, 40 years from now, they would be big enough. So I don't want to pitch that as the solution, but it's a secondary succession plan for that. There's a few places for art that could be commissioned or acquired. The two at the bottom, we'd sort of played around with the idea of having some actual kinetic sculptural things that moved in the wind, perhaps. But that's really a place to put some art. And then in the days of social media, this idea of having a selfie spot with some sort of whimsical installation, like oversized lifesaver chairs or something like that, is always popular with visitors. And ample lighting so that it's pleasant for a sunset walk, or after you get out of a restaurant, you can take a stroll and feel safe and secure. Now, moving to some renderings of the design. This is of the, obviously, of the playground. The idea, because we have a relatively compact space, we're proposing a large signature piece, a ship, which has a lot of play value built into it, so we don't have to have a big spread out playground with lots of separate things. So this accomplishes a lot in a smaller footprint. This doesn't really show it, but staff had a great idea about trying to make it more representative of the squid fleet. So we'll be working on giving it a bit more contextual character. One day we'll get that idea done. Another view of that corner as you come around off the promenade, there's the oversized chairs, or at least that concept. You can see how the playground really will be a very active edge to this space, and there's gaps and there's lots of built-in seating for parents to and caregivers to drop down and have a moment's rest while their kids play.
One of the things we hear a lot from City Council is accessibility, or I'm not sure what the right term is these days, but disabled citizens, how accessible
do you envision this being?
The playground itself?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question. I think the word you're looking for is inclusive or all abilities in terms of the playground, which is very, very much in the conversation lately. I would say what we've shown here is sort of in the middle. It's not at the end of the inclusive spectrum, which is a very different animal in terms of the design. But you're able to get up to everything. The surfacing is all accessible, so everything can be accessed at ground level. So I'd have to say it's better than average, but it's not fully inclusive and accessible. It has to meet ADA at a baseline.
Okay.
So everything we're talking about is above ADA. How it could lay out for a craft fair or some sort of a festival along that arcing promenade, showing it with the pop-ups. But I know that you have art shows, you have movie nights, you have all sorts of things going on. So that's just one way that it could be brought to life. The paving there would be designed to be driven on, so you could have, if you had a farmer's market, you could actually allow authorized vehicles to get around that loop and do the setup and stuff like that. But you'll probably recognize a lot of the sort of landscape features in there. We're pulling those out of the sort of kelp courtyard detail with the walls and the boulders and the paving details, so that there's some consistent design thread coming through. So this is what I was alluding to earlier with that parking lot edge. We've built it up in order to get a great graceful slope down towards the stage, and also that helps with the wind mitigation. Also screens the parking lot. Once you're in the park, the cars will go away, which we think is a really good move. So we have this layered edge with a series of walls and landscaping, and then the art wall on top of that. So it's very, very strong sense of arrival from the parking lot. And it, once you get in there, I think you'll feel like you're in a special space. You could embellish it with sort of signage that ties into the village's other wayfinding signage, or you could have some sponsorship. You know, that the world's your oyster in that sort of conversation. The little picnic area. You take your take out lunch from the village. You can see the stage sort of alluded to in the background of a lot of these images. And then how it might look if you were levitating above the parking lot at dusk at an event, so you could see how it all comes together there with the beautiful backdrop. So that's the last sort of image I have to show you. The last thing that staff asked us to do was come up with some sort of preliminary budgeting, so that you had some idea what order of magnitude this interesting conversation to be having after the last item. So we did. We took a look at it. It is preliminary, and it does say budget, doesn't say estimate, because there's a lot of unresolved detail. But we know, generally speaking, the sort of order of magnitude of some of these improvements. So we've sort of really collapsed it down. I do have more information that was based on a more granular look at it. But in terms of presentation for the commission, we broke it into baseline improvements, which is that's the infrastructure and the basic, you know, setting the table for the space. Then you have signature improvements, which are these sort of feature elements within the park that there's all sorts of latitude to go design up, design down, look at in different ways. And then soft costs, so you're actually getting a true picture of an all-in budget, which would be consultant costs, permitting, construction management, and contingencies. So we think Today, in today's dollars, there's no escalation built on this into this, but in today's dollars, we think it's around about a $9 million budget for the vision that we just outlined for you. And that's the last slide I have. We can entertain questions. Nick's here. He can certainly talk about architecture of the stage. Whatever else.
Thoughts on this?
Yeah, please. Thanks, Mike. Thank you for that, Garrett, and I appreciate all the work that you guys have done. I mean, I think this looks great. Just a couple comments. One is, and I don't have an answer for this, and I don't expect one tonight, but we've made a lot of effort in the last couple of years to alter our landscaping to make it more drought tolerant and kind of represent the fact that water's a precious resource. I don't know that your renderings convey that. Now, and maybe I don't know my plants that well. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's something that we need to think about with that landscaping for this project, right? To kind of represent that. And I don't know whether palm trees are still considered a good thing or not. You know, at one point they were following the fire. I know they were not very popular at all, but maybe that's not an issue for us down here at the harbor. And my only other comment is kind of with respect to your budget, and this is just a comment for the rest of for the other commissioners. I think we have to be all in. If we're going to do something like this, we have to be prepared to be all in. Because, you know, in some respects, what we have right now is a space that we really didn't go all in on, and it's kind of sitting there underutilized. And I don't want to spend 3.75 to do the basics and then wheedle around and, you know, not get to these things and not get the benefit of the space. So my feeling is if we're going to go for it, we need to go for it. Those are my comments for now.
Brian.
Thank you, Chris. Good comments. And I guess what we're moving toward here is realizing, you said this earlier, Brian, that the space was originally set for development. And but, you know, development in those days was, well, maybe it's a hotel, maybe it's more shopping space, but this is development. This is a development in a way, I think, that brings people here. I was a little concerned thinking, well, we're giving up this space. But I think, Brian, you mentioned also that I do recall now that we have some of our master tenants. The local coastal plan's been changed a little bit to allow more development on their sites. So bringing something like this to a destination, making it a destination and something, I think is very, very important. Losing the carousel for children, that was might seem like a small thing, but this is a big piece. I do like the shell. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I was the Waikiki shell. I mean, you go there. I mean, Slack Guitar. I mean, Jimmy Buffett. All the, God rest his soul. They've all played there. But not that somebody's going to play like down here. But I think it fits in. It fits the motif. You know. Yeah. It's right. A little heavy metal. We can test it out. But you know, activating that space costs money, and programming that, this is going to take a fair bit of that. But if we commit, you know, and you hit it on the head, Chris, going all in, I think we have to decide we're going all the way, or we're not going to start. Because, and I am a little worried about the palm trees, just for the fact that, you know, they're non-native to start with, but not so much. And the fire is an issue, but I'm wondering if there's something else. But I the trees give some depth, and I know why they're there. But you know, they really turn into telephone poles after they get a little higher. I mean, they're all the way along. Now we gives you the opportunity to put colored lights on them and do some fun things on it, which I get that. So I don't know what other plants could interact to that. I think Chris's point about drought tolerant, or, you know, I don't, you know, we can't do something like this and put DG in there. I mean, a decomposed ground. I mean, it has to have lawn, and it has to bring your chair, you know, bring your low back chair, and if it's on the slant, I mean, we got to commit to that. So maybe we, you know, how do we capture water on the site? How do we do a better job of recapturing water around the village to maybe be able to say this? And I know the city does have treated water down there that's not potable, that our ability to use some of that. So I like where we're going and to go on, and I do think the ADA is a great opportunity to to be able to focus on some of that and make it work. I think what was my other I talked about it earlier. The only other thing I did want to mention, I think I love the children's playground. I don't know if we're compromising. You said is it the wine tasting room is right there? Just worry about not a big deal, but their outside patio and being close to a liquor next to a children's playground, I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, there's barriers and things. It might be something that might come up. I don't know. The picnic area, I love. I love those sort of the canopy ideas. Those hard, like the look like sails. I know they did it down at the State Beach Park. And Nick, thank you for that lovely design. And not 30, 40 years ago that the state park stole from us. But the idea of creating those kind of structures. It's a 21st century destination there, and I think the idea of how we work the children's playground, maybe more, you have a little bit in there, we've using some of it already in the village, maybe, you know, along with squid boat, we have squid, or you have octopus, so you have some of those kind of things, educate the kids about what's going on out in the channel, you know. You know, I mean, a whale takes up an awful lot of space, but you can get a lot of kids crawling on top of it. So maybe it's things along that line, too.
I was thinking about more accommodation. The accommodation being generational. Most of your new generations are going to be carrying devices. They would anticipate being electrified, probably with solar energy, solar panels. Probably so I can park my EV in the parking lot. If I wanted to get onto Wi-Fi, they would expect that. I think any type of entertainment there. I like the idea and conceptually, but I think you have to think of the generations coming in. It's no more transistor radios and we go over here. It's basically, where do I plug in? Where do I turn on? Where do I do this? And having something like that. As That's for right. the, you know, and I like the panels there. Again, can they be solar so that automatically that the, you know, I think that would get people to say, this is really thought out. It uses, energy effectively, not just efficiently, because everyone's going to expect that. But some things like that, I think, would really. And I too am, you know, well, if it's not a palm tree, because palm trees get to a point where, I mean, you can't even take them out. It costs you just as much to take them out than to do something. But I'm not an arborist, so I don't know what else you can do for that. But that's what I'm thinking, because I'm basically thinking if you want to show a movie or something on there too, in that, you know, you can have entertainment. But I think that would get generational, utilizing what our power source is going to be. Let's see if we can use solar if we can. I think that would help.
Wind, I'm sorry, but there's a number of small wind generators. I mean, you look out on the harbor and every boat has one of those. A lot of boats have, several boats have them. The idea of incorporating that into this would be an excellent opportunity.
Yeah, right. Just write that down. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Just a quick question. I'm not spatially oriented. So did you say that the lawn area would be cut more than in half to create that. So do we have a sense of the number of people who could attend an event there?
That is a good question. This is not a scientific answer, but my estimate would be for that sort of lawn area, looking at a performance, 200 to 300.
Okay.
It's not efficient.
Obviously that would be stretched all the way over to both sides. So
yeah,
okay.
And it's because it's not fixed seating, it's pretty inefficient. People lay out blankets and spread out and stuff. So that's it's really not scientific, but somewhere in that neighborhood.
Brian, do you recall what kind of attendance we had at the summer movies? Because that grass was not crowded, but fairly full for the summer movies.
Yeah, and there you had the entire space, right?
Yeah.
Completely flat.
Did we ever estimate a count?
I think it was pushing 400 to 500, I think.
Okay, so your estimate is comparable.
Yeah, it's a good design consideration, though, because if it was designed purely as an event space, you wouldn't have as many other amenities in it. So it is a balance of what is the purpose of the space.
And I wanted to also make sure I understood it's sloped, looking down towards the shell.
Yeah.
So if we wanted to have a lot of tables and a farmer's market, are they all on a sloped?
Yes. So let me explain. I can't point, but if you can imagine at either end of the arced pathway, basically it's level with the waterfront promenade, and then it slopes up gently to a high point right there where the cursor is, which is about 4 feet above what's existing today. And then it does slope back down towards the marina. And it's pretty gentle, but in the spirit of my previous conversation about balancing, if you had things along that path, there would be a slight cross slope, say for those pop up tents, and they would have to adjust.
So you couldn't, or if you were on the grass itself, it's going to be more awkward than if everything got set up on the path. So having a farmer's market there, it's going to be on a sloped setting.
Yeah, I would imagine a farmer's market would be oriented to the path.
Okay.
Similar to it being on a street.
So the grass doesn't necessarily lend itself to anything other than the like kind of viewing and sitting and rolling down it.
Like passive recreation, you could park cars on it for sure if you had a car, some sort of a car show. So there's so many different events. I think it could be utilized in different ways, but it's not flat. It is a good point because we're trying to meet multiple goals.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious. I mean, I love it, and it's certainly better than what we have now. And you're trying to accomplish a lot in what is a fairly small space. So. And I guess the question for the commission is priorities. Like, does it meet the primary goals that we had for that space?
Well, let me jump in on that. I mean, I think one of the primary visions that I've always had for the harbor and for this space in particular is we need to draw more local residents. And parents are always looking for a place to take the kids to a playground. Shows and concerts are always something. Hey, let's go do that. We can get dinner down there and take it down to the bandstand. The summer movies were a big hit. But this kind of environment just makes it so much more enjoyable because, we left Jaws because we were freezing. So I really love the idea. I think it does address that. We want to draw, and an outdoor draw. I mean, we live in Ventura, right? Outdoor is great. So I think it addresses the wind issue. I think it takes advantage of the view. I really like the idea. I will echo what Chris said, sustainability. That's one of our themes. We got the national park just down the road. Let's build on that somehow, build on Channel Islands. There's a lot of native plants that are endemic and unique to the Channel Islands, right? And maybe we somehow pull that theme in. I like the squid boat. Whales aren't bad. Makes me think of up in Santa Barbara, there was a great children's park right on the waterfront with like whales or, you know, in the water. I used to take my kids there all the time. It's a great park. Recently taken over by homeless folks, but that's a different battle to fight. AstroTurf, forget about it. The Coastal Commission just tore AstroTurf apart last week. So
microplastic.
Yeah, yeah. So it's got to be some kind of natural turf that soaks up the water. And a tweak, you know, the big lawn chairs, I'm kind of over those. So I like the idea of a selfie thing, but you see those big lawn chairs everywhere. I really love the idea. What I'm really curious about, I mean, $9 million is a lot of money. We just talked about we can't pave a street that's going to cost us $3 million, or the city can't pay their bill. How do we find the money? What are the next steps? When do you engage, like the Coastal Commission? So I'd be curious. Love the concept. What are the next steps is my question.
And before O&M.
Yeah.
I see this as a CIP. And so I'd like to see, okay, $9 million, we phase it in over how many years. But I'd like to see what the operation and maintenance from your design, and is there anything we can do to, because that is fiscal sustainability.
See, I hear you phase it in over multiple years. I like what Chris said. We're all in.
Yeah.
We find the money, we go, and this is a, you know, a relatively rapid turn. The trick is, how the heck do we find the money?
Well, before you respond, I like anything that we do at the village, it may partially be addressed through our CAM funds, but that's all the more reason that we really need to engage our tenants. You know, maybe there'll be a little more work on this and we kind of get it. It's not final by any stretch, but we get to a point where we really are going to need to sit down with our tenants and say, okay, everybody, this is what we're thinking. Are we on the right track? What are you thinking? How does this tie in? And really get them on board.
I like that idea.
If you wouldn't mind just listening to the conversation, great dialogue. I love actually the wind generator thing could be really interesting. Yeah. And they could be very sculptural and colorful, and I don't know, maybe they replaced the palm trees.
It adds whimsy, which you mentioned, which I love.
Do they make noise too, though?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll have to tune them.
We just need to make sure everything's in the same key. That's all.
A couple of thoughts, and I think most of you know I was from the, it was his fault. I was on the court commission for 8 years and was a member of the board when this thing came through. It's a little surreal for me. This wasn't a plan. I didn't figure, you know, I was going to hire this guy that didn't happen. The idea of this as a civic amenity for the whole city is really significant. And, you know, I mean, 37 years ago, we would bring our kids down to the merry-go-round. That was the thing that brought us, the merry-go-round and the ice cream shop. That was a destination, and we could do it. And it was a routine, regular thing. This is so far beyond what that was. And to your question about the sloping, we could look at a terraced design so that we had maybe 12-foot or 14-foot deep terraces gradually stepping up, which would allow you to set up tables and chairs and do the more formal fundraising. So that's something that we could, you know, evaluate with you. The issue of no grass, that's a hard one. You know, we all know grass is big, you know, water soaker, but in the right places, you know, it makes sense. So we want to evaluate that carefully, or what are our alternatives? We could certainly use pavers. We could do things that are attractive, but it wouldn't be the same when you spread a blanket out on it, you know? So that's something we want to take a look at. The other thing about the street conversation is just maddening. I have to believe, and Todd, I think, spoke with us about some of these possibilities, that if we could tie this to a coastal access grant application process of some kind and make it a package deal, this thing sweetens that request substantially. And it's not just this, it's this in combination with the whole harbor as this public destination, you know, that brings people to the coast of all income spectrums, all generations. There's got to be a way to do that. And anybody that knows me knows this, I'm always about what ought to happen and how can we make it happen, not what's going to get in our way. So I would just offer that. We could figure that out, I think.
Brian?
One of the things that just screams out at me when I look at it from the top is, you know, in this day and age, I mean, I can see coming in here, skating, you know, grinding on the stairs, grinding on. How do we, I mean, how do you incorporate something like that? Because we can't, we're not going to have two security guards there all day on the weekends or during the week. I mean, you look at it now, and I look at that, and I thought, wow, with the gentle slope and everything, boy, we're setting ourselves up. I mean, this is probably the best skate park in the city. But we,
strike that from the record.
Yeah,
yeah. No, but we do need to bring that into play somehow. And I think maybe through the concrete or something, making it rough, making it smooth, making it, I don't know. I know we pushed. We were trying to get strollers through there and things like that. So I just don't want to see what I saw happen up at Surface Point. We got all that stuff in and immediately started getting. I mean, they were grinding this. To the point that the stuff was compromised because of the sea air. So that's a worry. Are there things in the industry that things were able to come up with? Because I think putting that kind of money in, we need to have some safeguards in that regard.
There certainly are. I kind of interested to ask Todd, are you having any issues around that? Are you having issues around the Kelp Plaza with this same topic?
We incorporated a marine brass skate guard that we put throughout the trellises that stopped that for us.
Yeah.
There is occasionally skateboarders that go on the stairs, but anything that has like a facade or a wall.
Right. Yeah. I know that's.
Yes. And in this case, they're decorative. They're sea stars that are wrapping around the sides of the wall.
There's definitely that. There's some other sort of design tricks. So you can see the walls are curved. They're not straight. So you can't grind along a convex curve. You slip off it.
Okay.
You can grind along a concave curve because it kind of holds you in.
Right.
If that makes sense. Right. So there's little things like that. It's certainly not going to stop it. And your point about just like cruising down the long pathway, that's really hard to deal with because to stop that, you're also making it less accessible for someone with strollers, walking difficulty and the rest of it. So that's a different issue.
Yeah.
One more nit kind of question. Actually, it's a big nit, but you have two concentric sidewalks there, arcs. Why the one closest to the bench hill? It seems like you're giving up grass or seating areas. Why do you think that path is necessary?
That's actually a good question. I could have explained that better. So the one that has like that alludes to flagstone, the sort of mottled color, that would be the stage platform.
Yeah, so, and I'm talking about the sidewalk just beyond.
In front of that, that's basically a flat paved area that you could lay out sort of accessible seating or VIP seating, something like that, because the lawn's not accessible. So that could be your ADA seating area in front of the stage. That's the purpose of that.
Yeah, that's a great point because what Brian mentioned when we went to saw Secretary Harlan speak about water pure, they had the presentation on the grass and there was Councilwoman Liz Campos stuck on a sidewalk because she couldn't get there. Yeah. So that would address that issue. That's a good point.
And along the back of it, there's a seat wall height. Wall, you can kind of see it in the background of there. So it's set up as like a little sort of that's the first bay of seating, and that there is a I could show you on a plan, but there's a way to get down to it that's all accessible. Like so, there's no steps. There's steps from this side, but on the other side, it ramps down smoothly.
How are where they're utilizing these concepts in other places? How are they doing security? And what I'm getting at is, I know on the East Coast they're using cameras, and you don't know they're cameras. I mean, like in plants, things like that.
Yeah.
And people say, well, why are you doing that? And it's because if there is any vandalism, it's much more cost effective to get it on camera and investigate than it is to, you know, okay, we want the police to. And that does another thing. they're basically saying, you know, we don't want patrols or anyone because it's like, well, what are they doing here? It must not be safe. What about security?
Well, you know, there's a few options. One is have the whole thing able to be locked, like fenced. Don't want to do that. You have a security guard wandering around, or you have cameras. There's not many other things to do. And cameras, you know, the jury's out with how effective that is. That just shows you that someone did something. It doesn't help you catch them necessarily. So it's not really a deterrent to a lot of people. If someone's intent on doing the wrong thing, they'll probably find a way to do it. So I don't have a magic answer for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think just in general,
public
that
space.
I think in general that just needs to continue to be a discussion. I mean, for Parade of Lights, we brought in quite a few additional security assets for the village, and those may be conversations we just need to have as a port district. We do have quite a few number of cameras as well, because they may capture something after the fact, but if you can get a visual, you can get a license plate, you can get something of that information. We have a whole system of cameras throughout the village that certainly would have those as well.
The pedestrian lights?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they would most likely be in the warm spectrum. Something that's more pleasant.
So good discussion, but let's bring this up to the planning level. So
I think your question earlier about next step, certainly continued engagement is good. This is a public meeting, but it is up against the holidays and we got bad weather, so that makes it hard. But I would like to have follow-up discussion with Coastal Commission staff, because even though I'm pretty comfortable with the view corridors, I think it is beneficial to keep that dialogue going as this project and the design continues to advance. And, you know, we'll talk about some of these issues that were raised here in terms of windscreens and some of these other things. The city we actually had out, I think, just in the last maybe 4 to 6 weeks, and saw what was, I think, pretty close to this, if not this. And they were extremely impressed with the effort up to this point. I think there's more due diligence we have to continue to do.
Who was that from the city?
That was parks, and it was okay. Community development.
Mm. Oh, perfect.
Okay. So, and in both cases, again, I think there's more due diligence to keep doing about the property itself. I think we have an early read from the city that the use is consistent with a commercial commercial zoned property. I want to do a little bit, continue to drill down on that even further, make sure there's no other property use restrictions or anything that I'm not currently aware of. And then I think we've got enough now. This is detailed enough where I think we got great feedback tonight, things to begin to incorporate in the next round, that I think in the new year we'd want to start to have some opportunities to meet with the tenants, maybe outside of a formal board meeting where it's more of a dialogue and discussion than you know, just the formality of this setting, and get some feedback on that. From there, I mean, not lost on us, of course, is a budget that we don't have the funding for. I think Commissioner Stevens is right. I mean, we sort of look at this and go, this is creating a destination here at the harbor. And I've been hearing that for as long as I've been working here, to continue to find ways to bring locals here and create a sense of place. And I think, you know, I think Nick hit a lot of those points extremely well. You know, in the last few years, we've been very successful, I think, with Todd's efforts and the admin team as a whole in finding opportunities for funding. As you point out, this could become, and I think, Todd, you've touched on it, this could be part of a trail program that brings people through the harbor, through this space, and out to the beach. There may be some additional areas we'd want to improve to make that linkage to the parking lot and then to the beach areas. But we also talked to the city about, you know, what are the different kinds of funding opportunities. And they did some, I forget which park it was, but they did some things in terms of some sponsorships and naming rights some opportunities there. So they have a program for that. It's easier for us to look at that. How did they handle that? Because once you get involved in public agency trying to secure private monies. You know, do you have naming rights? How, you know, what are the limitations of those things? So I think this is one of those where this probably really needs to be a combination of funding sources to make this happen. But at this point, we're still in the design stages. I think we take it to the next level, taking all this feedback, meeting with the tenants, talking about it more, us continuing to do our due diligence, meet again with Coastal Commission, check the property itself, and then from there begin to come back with what would be probably a near final design.
Okay, I appreciate that timeline. We've had good discussion here. I want to make sure we give public an opportunity or staff. No? About online, anybody online
well,
want to contribute?
Actually, that's a really good point. I think we probably said it in the board report, but one of the things we've done is take the time to at our staff meetings give everybody, because of all those different considerations you talked about, everything from maintenance to water to security to marketing to all those things. Because as you say, you put a shell there, you need to program it. And that comes with the cost itself. You build something more than what you got today, you've got a bigger maintenance cost than what you had before. And I wouldn't say, you know, this is one of those where you take all the feedback and then you come up with the best that addresses all those things the best that you can. But there's certainly going to be, you know, costs to maintain such a beautiful asset over time, security issues, other things I think we'll have to continue to think about over time.
I just want to say thank you because this is one of those rare presentations mm-hmm. that you get to see the conceptual view, the logical view behind it, and the actual physical, and then we get to interact. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's just a rendering, and then people, oh, what about this? Oh, we don't want to get into those details. But I want to say thank you because this is one of the rare presentations that we got to see. And then you came back and explained, oh, it's sloped. This is how it is. This is why we did that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thought through all those details. No public comments. No public comments here. No public comments there. This is for our information. Good discussion. I think we're ready to move on. Nick Leaf, thank you very much. You got our juices going. So
thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And have a great break. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you in the new year. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Safe commute back home.
Thank you.
All right. We have one item left on our agenda, and that is an opportunity to pursue this district leadership
distinction.
Distinction. Thank you. Over to you, Brian.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Todd, next slide. So this is just kind of a summary of what you saw in the board report. As you know, we're members of the California Special Districts Association, CSDA. Through their Special District Leadership Foundation, this is the program that I'm going through for the Special District Manager certification. But they also have things for agencies as a whole, not just individuals like myself. And one of those was the transparency certification that this district received. Call this that certification plus. And what it does is enables the districts to demonstrate to their communities, the media, legislators, the commitment to operate in a sound, responsible manner. Districts apply for the designation as a district of distinction by submitting financial audits, policies and procedures, and proof of training by commissioners and executive staff. The SDLF has five programs that special districts can apply to show dedicated excellence in local government. At my most recent board meeting in earlier this month for our Ventura County chapter, of which I serve as the treasurer for that board, the statement was made that currently there are no special districts within Ventura County who have achieved the status. I think this is within our reach. We've already accomplished the transparency certification. Gloria can assist us with the areas related to audits and other things. But I bring it to you here because it actually does create a commitment for not just me, but for the board itself. And I mean, I think training for the board is good generally. This just sort of gives an extra incentive, to be able to do that. So that's what I heard. There may be others that are working on it right now, and I don't know that we would get to the finish line first. That's not the point. The point is showing a high level of public transparency and, again, management of this organization. Accreditation is valid for 3 years. Next. Districts must demonstrate that they undergo regular financial audits, which we do, have no major deficiencies, which we don't, and apply any recommendations to future years, we would. Documents to submit are 3 copies of the most recent district audits, including financial statements. There's a bunch of numbers here that I'm sure Gloria knows better than I do. What's that? You've already put that together. District has this requirement completed, which was the last bullet there. Thank you, Gloria. And next. Demonstrate that their operations conform to all statutes and regulations under state laws reflected in a policies and procedures manual. Policies and procedures should focus on governance, ethics, board conduct, district finances, reserves, reimbursement compensation. I'm assuming all these things sound pretty familiar. We'd probably dust this off and make sure that it would meet the requirements. Current approved policies and procedures manual, we have that. Board minute actions adopting or having reviewed the policies and procedures within the past year. Jessica usually takes care of those items. We've updated, reviewed its board commission policies and procedures manual, investment policies, and so on. Again, you've seen some of that, I think, as recently as the first meeting in December. And the district has these requirements completed as well. Next. Class attendance, such as a certificate of completion for each board member, general manager, and other executive staff members, as identified by the board in the following areas: governance training, 6 hours of basic governance training, governance foundations by CSDA Special District Leadership Academy, the SDLA satisfies this requirement. Board member best practices, 3 hours plus 2 approved webinars will satisfy this requirement. Approved webinars or board member and district liability issues. Chair, I think you just talked about wanting to hear more about those insurance trainings that our staff was going to. Who does what? Best practices in board and staff relations. I think we have great relations between all of the parties, but obviously there's training here. They talk about the commissioners and staff participating in the program would have to complete these trainings. So, look, I value your time and mine. This is not insignificant. I think we're up to 9 hours or so there with this. But do we have any more slides on this, Todd, or is this the last one? Two more. Okay. Ethics training, documentation verifying completion of AB 1234. Commission management staff completed this training in 2023. We've met this requirement already. Harassment prevention training. We'd have to complete this training. Commission would have to take the training. It's not mandatory training since commissioners are volunteers. As staff, we do this every year, every 2 years, I think. We already do this. So we would just have to see if we're up to speed on that. And staff and commissioners participating in the program would have to complete the training. You said there's one more. Must include commissioner roster, will complete application fee, et cetera. So I sort of looked at this and thought this is not necessarily a huge lift given everything else that is already demonstrated as being complete. Some of these trainings, as you saw, were webinar based. They may not all be that. There could be some travel involved, which of course the district would fund if the board approved it in advance of the training or subsequently. So that's our presentation. I think it's something that would advance our certificate of transparency to a higher level from the state's perspective.
So the agenda item is consider participation or consider pursuit of this certification. So, commissioners' thoughts, Chris, you want to start?
Well, I can't speak for the commissioners. I'm certainly willing to pursue this. I guess my qu I, We have a very small staff, and but you're comfortable. We have the time and the resources to devote our staff to meet all of these requirements.
I think, and Gloria, you weren't the lead on this, but I think, I mean, it's been shown that I think actually quite a bit of it we've already met.
Okay.
So I'd probably want to look a little bit closer at like where and when these trainings are.
That was my next question, was both how many of them are online or webinars, and how many are physical that we have to attend.
Usually ethics training can be done online.
We do it online, our current requirement.
Some of the SDLF.
My concern, it's very hard. I mean, we have an ad hoc committee meeting, just as an example, tomorrow. Well, it took us quite a while to find time and we're available. And so if we have sessions that we have to actually physically go to, that's going to be a challenge, I think. But if certainly the best case scenario is they're all online kind of webinars, and that then we can do them on our own at our pace, and that's a lot easier. But I'd like a little more information on that element of it personally, but I'm certainly open to it and interested to hear what the other commissioners think about it.
Yeah, so just as on a basic level, I'm all about like being recognized. What does it bring us other than the feels good?
I think the training itself, in terms of the commissioners, I mean, one of the things, and we probably haven't spent enough time doing this, but there's certainly trainings that CSDA and SDLF put on throughout the year, some of which I attend, some of which other staff attend. I think there's benefit to you as commissioners just to gain the knowledge of best practices and so on. So I think that's the inherent value beyond getting a piece of paper that said, you know, we achieved this level. If it were just that by itself, I would, you know, say that's probably not as much worth the time. Probably the other tie-in for me is our public and civic engagement plan. It's not that we put that in here and when we just did the most recent update, but the board has made such a strong commitment and carried through with it with respect to transparency and public and civic engagement. I think this is just one more way to demonstrate the importance to the board in that area.
Just one other question on, I think it was item number two. Conforming to all statutes and regulations under state law. What does pending litigation mean in relation to that?
Is that wording you see up there? Or
districts must demonstrate that their operations conform to all statutes and regulations under state laws reflected in policies and procedures manuals.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can check with legal counsel on that in terms of, and also SDLF itself, right? How are special districts demonstrating that to you?
It sounds like if we just present a policy or procedure manual that shows that we're conforming, which is always frustrating because who knows whether someone's implementing it appropriately. But I would be curious whether SLDF would say, have the litigation be resolved, since both of them have to do with statutes and constitutional peace. So it's not like a lease negotiation that went bad kind of thing, but specifically, I mean, the Brown Act is a fairly in your face piece that we're supposed to be abiding by. So I'd hate for us to put all this work in and then get dinged because that's still pending. So I'd
certainly
be curious
could take a look at
that.
Yeah. I don't know of any case where the district is found to not be in compliance with these laws, but I understand the question.
Brian, thanks for bringing this forward. I think the opportunity is there. I know over all my years on council, I always sort of looked at special districts a little differently until I got on center on this special district, or certainly on the Ventura Regional Sanitation District, and realized that sometimes there isn't that, education that comes with when you get onto the board. I do recognize that for us, I'd like to know a little bit more about what would be required of us, but it does appear we do both ethics, we do Brown Act, we do a fair bit of these boxes are checked for our board members. Just a little concerned, I think, as Chris mentioned, the ability of what it really takes for staff to really dig down. Jackie, your comment is very well taken about we just hand in the paperwork and, you know, are we doing it or not? And does somebody come out and do that? I mean, you know, I guess we have auditors that do all that. And Gatsby, we get awards for that. Those are things that contribute to that also, that said those policies are in place. But it just seemed like it didn't seem that onerous, the checkup, which to me makes it feel okay. You know, check the boxes. There's enough stuff there that says you're doing the right thing. Other than coming in here and having somebody spend a week just going through everything, that's disruptive for everybody. And I know that doesn't happen, but I do think special districts have started to assert itself a lot more. And I do like the open platform where people share their, hey, you know, we had board members, or we were looking for somebody to do this and this, and, you know, can somebody help us out in this kind of a question? So there's an open platform that's really been helping. So I'd be interested in what you think the full spectrum of what will be involved, but I don't see anything wrong with going forward to make that evaluation.
Sure. I certainly can gather more information. You know, maybe one other context here is that when we travel to conferences, and you made me think about it when you said special districts and you came. I mean, one of the concerns of CSDA is the impression of you know, the public that who are these special districts and where are they and what are they doing with our money and what's going on here, and they're not accountable, and that couldn't be further from the truth. And so some of these programs, I think they're not just meant to be a pat on the back. They're meant to really help to elevate the understanding of special districts in people's communities. You know, they know their city, they know their county. They may be happy or not, but they generally know who they are. But who are these other districts? And I think some of this comes, at least from my perspective, some of this comes from that concern that there's a lack of understanding. And sometimes then that translates into legislation that is potentially harmful to special districts. That, well, you know, I'm hearing from my constituents that, you know, there's these shadow governments that are doing this, that, and, you know, we'll probably have to regulate them more. Well, you know, rather than be reactive, be proactive in terms of demonstrating the kinds of level of things, from auditing to, you know, to Brown Act, to training, to all the things that goes into running a special district. But I always appreciate concern for our time and resources and how we best allocate those. So those are always, that's always good feedback for me. But if you went to these conferences, which do have a lot of commissioners, these are the concerns that typically come up with respect to special districts.
Having worked for the federal government, this is what's called management control and good governance. And I tell you, it's a real bear to try to, unless you do something like this to prove, especially to an external auditor, that you have governance, that you have policies and procedures, that your governing board understands what they are, instead of saying, well, go talk to the staff, you know. I think it's very, very important. And I, just for what you were saying, that in this county, how many governing boards are certified? I think that's telling. It's typically, the challenge is not that it's a lot of work and a lot of time. It's usually the commitment of members of the governing board that want to pursue this and is saying, well, why? You know, I've been appointed. I know what I'm doing. I take the required courses. Leave me alone. I think this is an extra step, and I think it's a step in the right direction. But I, too, would like to know, you know, is it going to add more rigor to what staff is doing, and will there be any conflicts? So I conceptually think it's great. I think logically, in terms of budget and planning and day-to-day operations, can we do it? I think if we got that assurance, I would say, yeah, great, let's do it, but I don't want to put more on other people's plates. I would be willing to do it, but
we're happy to come back with more information. We wanted to, this was timely and thought we'd bring it forward for discussion, but it's good questions.
So I'll add my thoughts, two things. Number one, the special districts, there's an overwhelming amount of information that kind of comes at us when you sign up for, when I got appointed to this position. I've had very little time to dig into any of it. And so if this is a forum to kind of help me, force me, set aside a little time to absorb some of that, I think that would be good. So that's point number one. Point number two is you talked about a lack of understanding. The public has a lack of understanding about special districts. I'd go further and I'd say there's a lack of trust, right? There's in the United States, there's just a cultural distrust of government, and we're government. And so if there's a way to pursue this distinction and certification, and it maybe is a small step towards building that trust, at least, hey, look, we've met these criteria. I think that's a positive. Now, the theme that I heard from everybody was caution of putting more work on staff, putting more work on the commissioners, putting more work on yourself. So the idea here, bringing this on the agenda, was consider participating. I think you've got a pretty wide spectrum of thoughts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you want to take that back and think about the resource demands? And
no, I think this, I think from the discussion, it's easy for us to talk more to SDLF about this and gather more information. I know they have a series of trainings coming up in the spring, I believe, this year, that are actually intended for commissioners more so than staff. Those might be some of those opportunities, district of distinction or not. They may be some of those opportunities to do some of these things for the reasons of just, again, best practices.
I would encourage you to at least bring those forward for our awareness a little bit more, because I tend not to spend a lot of time reading all the emails that I get.
I understand. So I'm good with the information I got back and would plan to bring it back with more information for you.
Okay. Let me open it up. Any other? We have no public here. Staff? Sounds like Brian summarized staff comments. Anybody online? No public comments online, so we'll close public comments. I think there was good discussion, so we'll close this last agenda item. Our next get together is in 2 weeks on January 3rd.
Yes, Wednesday, January 3rd.
January 3rd. Before we adjourn, I wanted to, for the staff that's here and staff that may be online, it's the end of 2023. It was a great, another exceptional year. You guys. I know the port does our real financial years kind of summer to summer, but hey, it's the end of the calendar year. It's a good time to reflect. It's been a great year, right? We didn't know. It came out of 2022. I can remember thinking, well, what does 23 hold? And is COVID past us? Clearly it's not. But the district is in a better spot today than we were a year ago. And you guys do great work. I congratulate you on a great year. Take some time off, enjoy family and friends, and we'll see you next year.
Thank you.
With that, we will adjourn for the evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Tom.